Hey, check it.
Always remember what Thomas Jefferson said. Kill the president.
Appears as though something has happened in the motorcade group.
Oswald has been shot.
This is a special conflict.
It's a series of tubes.
You went to take it. This is
focus. Non-terminal repeating phantasm.
I know a motherfucking big boat when I see one.
We're class 5 full roaming vapor.
Oh, shit. Those are aliens.
Y'all fucking.
I am a human.
You're the old one. It's really weird.
You degenerates.
Welcome to Podcast Foil Fina, guys.
Playing Magic the Gathering, which is embarrassing because I'm sitting when I play.
There's got to be a Robert Duvall style monologue for every fucking lost Magic the Gathering game or Dungeons and Dragons where it's like you do the line better because you remember the whole thing, Jess. So yeah,
which one?
The they took the boat chief, like, I don't know,
oh, you're talking about Robert Shaw, not Robert Shaw. Duvall.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm fucking stoned.
25 weeaboos go into the con, 13 come out.
Waifus took the rest.
I was going to say the lollies took the rest.
I had to tap 3 land cards, chief.
We should raise a whole bunch of money under the guise that it's going to charity, and then instead take it and hire the dude that does SpongeBob's voice to just read Kurt Cobain's suicide note in SpongeBob's voice. That's what we did with $174,000.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
April Fools.
It's better to burn out than to fade away.
Patrick is the El Duce that Courtney hires to kill him.
You need to kill Kurt.
This is Patrick.
No.
Oh my god, replace. Dub over every, like, Mussolini speech with SpongeBob's voice, but keep the words the same.
I want to make a movie about a serial killer, but his inner voice that tells him to kill is SpongeBob.
You should murder that bitch.
You know you want to.
Mine's Mike from fucking Beastie Boys. I told you guys that.
Go to Taco Bell and buy a burrito!
Oh, the voices are back. Welcome, everyone, to another installment of Podcast 1289. I'm going to edit that laugh onto the end of one of my jokes that didn't get a big laugh, by the way.
That is the single most opportunistic thing you've ever said.
That you've heard.
My old man didn't pay $14,000 for audio editing school for nothing to not make my jokes funnier, motherfuckers. But anyway, it's me, your boy, Jesse. I'm one of your many hosts. Tonight, we've got with us, to my left, we've got Dan.
Hey, everybody.
To my right, we've got Homestyle Mike.
Howdy.
Back on the couch full of knives. Rob's in town.
I actually moved the couch full of knives to my new apartment. I'm just sitting in a normal chair tonight.
Are you squatting?
Kind of, sort of.
Rob's in Stiz's room right now.
Rob's just behind a wall somewhere.
And our brother from another paranormal mother coming all the way from the heartlands of Texas. We've got the co-host of the Secret Transmission podcast. We got Toby in the house, everybody.
I'm so excited to not curse tonight and talk about Jesus.
Oh, you came to the wrong fucking neighborhood.
Who invited the square?
Who are you? And everybody's favorite nihilist, except for Herzog, of course, is here, ladies and gentlemen. We've got John.
Hi.
We made it out of that one alive. Okay, right on. So, speaking of secret transmissions, we got a not so secret transmission that we're going to talk about tonight. I'm super excited for this because we're revisiting one of the very first topics we ever discussed on Podcast 1289. It came up briefly in one of our Strange Communications episodes, and tonight we are going to give it the full episode treatment. In case you haven't guessed it, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about the Max Headroom Broadcast Signal Intrusion Incident. So Dan, where do we start with something like this? I mean, this as far as crazy pop culture incidents go, this is like God tier.
It's up there, man. It's a pretty good one. So just getting right into it.
Hell yeah.
On November 22nd, 1963,
John F. Kennedy was killed by the Illuminati.
follow the money.
Yes, this is the same date as the JFK assassination.
Read between the lines. Max Headroom fired the magic bullet.
It's like the new Ides of March, I suppose.
Remember the 22nd of November. You know what I noticed? Ventura's voice is just Hulk Hogan's with a bunch of shit in his mouth.
More or less, yeah.
It's the gap between his teeth.
Yeah, it's the gap, brother.
I guess he's like probably like a failed clone of him or something like that.
Like one of the Cosby clones?
Yeah. So anyway.
That Flash series isn't funny anymore.
So anyway, it was a rainy Sunday night around 9:15 p.m. WGN-TV's Channel 9 was showing highlights from the Bears-Lions game from earlier that day.
Now, Bears, was this in Chicken Town or Chi Town, wherever the fuck you savages call it?
Yes, this was in Chicago.
Chicago.
Who won? Definitely wasn't the Lions.
So, sportscaster Dan Rohn, who I have tweeted about this, and he has since responded.
Wait,
what? Since not responded.
Oh.
Sorry, excuse me.
Damn it, I was like, you got it. Like, how fucking sad is that? That, like, at this point in his life and career, he would answer podcast 1289 in under 6 hours.
35 years this man has been at WGN. I'm checking Twitter there? Right now to see if he's... Yeah, he's still there.
Oh, man, he's like mopping the floors, isn't he? That poor son of a bitch.
They just prop him up in the corner somewhere.
Yeah, I tweeted him 2 hours ago. He has not responded. The tweet, however, has been seen by 15 people.
That's impressive.
By the way, Dan, if you do end up listening to this episode, just tell us to go fuck ourselves so we can make it a pinned tweet, please.
Podcast 1289, go fuck yourself. Dan Rohn, WGN.
Man, once that happens, we've made it.
Yeah, come on. You know, that's just a New Jersey Christmas card.
So anyway.
Yeah, speaking of New Jersey, I'm here.
Hey.
God damn shit. It.
Didn't fucking intro me.
Bagels.
Dude, I'm sorry. I am really drunk.
Introducing... Chef Bagels. Here's your introduction.
No, I'm going to edit this back in too. Jesus Christ. Well, I don't feel bad. No one else fucking remembered you, asshole. Anyway.
I'm very forgettable. That's what everybody keeps telling me.
Anyway. All right. Going back to it. So, sportscaster Dan Rohn was talking about the 30-10 victory at Soldier Field over clips of gameplay when the screen dropped to black.
Who won?
What do you say?
Bears did.
Of course, the Bears.
So yeah,
the Bears.
At this point, I think that fucking Detroit Lions are just a scam to make money.
Oh no, they suck back then. And they still suck now.
Yeah, it's a tax write-off.
How many fucking Super Bowls can you lose before they're like, you can't be a team anymore?
This is how dynasties are made.
I think it's just a social experiment, kind of like they saw the Cubs and they were like, you know what? I want to see what happens if we make a football team that'll just keep losing and losing and losing.
What if we apply this to football?
Yeah.
So, showing highlights, screen drops to black.
McMahon and McKinnon, 14-0 Bears. Then the defense, which hadn't put up a sack in 12 quarters, finally did.
So, like, that wasn't super uncommon. Like, that just happened. Like, I assume the signal dropped out when it was analog and bullshit, right?
Yeah, dude. Dude, like, everyone talks about, like, remember the analog TV signal? Like, it was in the fucking 80s. Dude, it only went off, like, 6 years ago. Yeah.
That was a nightmare if you're broke, dude.
Yeah, dude.
So, screen went black. When it came back up, what was there was obviously not the news. There stood a person in a brown blazer, white shirt and black tie, wearing a rubber Max Headroom mask. You know...
Wait, you sure this isn't the news?
You know, that beloved 1980s computer-generated TV host.
Sounds pretty HLN to me. I don't want my...
You sure that's not Judge Jeanine Pirro?
Behind this mask figure was a sheet of corrugated metal, seesawing left and right, sort of to imitate the computer-generated background of the Max Headroom show. So there was no sound except for this, like, weird, pulsing, analog whine. Like, which, if you watch the show happen, it kind of goes with the seesawing, so it might just be this, like, weird interference thing that was happening. Just a fun thing to speculate.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You plug a whole bunch of shit into one outlet or one power source, yeah, it's gonna fuck up any sort of audio recording thing you do.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That wasn't a joke. That was just, like, you know, helpful hints to podcasters, actually.
Fun fact.
The more you know.
Don't record your phone while you're plugging it in. or you're charging. Either way. So, he didn't say anything. All he did was sort of bob around the screen briefly, before the station's backup transmitter kicked in and the pirate signal just was off the airwaves.
Arr.
And then returned back to a surprised Dan Rohn, who, like a goddamn pro, said...
Well, if you're wondering what's happened...
So am I.
Wow, I didn't know Paul Joseph Watson was around back then.
You know, you gotta wonder, too, like, if Tim Burton got, you know, his inspiration for the Joker doing this shit from this happening. Because this was, like, what, the year before Batman 89?
Yeah.
And he then went on to say that the computer that they were using for broadcasting, quote...
What, the fucking, like, ENAC machine they had over on the second floor or something?
Yeah.
What kind of fucking computer were they running in 88? It's like, we've got the new 2 megabyte processor. It's fucking, we're gonna be on Mars next year.
So, initially, I'm sure this was jarring. Like, who knew what the hell that was, right? What did it even mean? This was 1987, so, like, the Cold War was still kind of a thing.
Was it 87 or 88?
87.
It was 87? Okay.
So, maybe it was the Russians.
What shitty Rocky sequel is this? The Russians couldn't give less of a fuck about what happens in fucking Illinois.
But... Jesse, all the movies from Illinois. Just think about it, The Breakfast Club.
You know what we found out? There is no fucking Shermer, Illinois.
Movies are fucking bullshit. So, this wasn't the last that the Chicagoland area would see Max Headroom. A few hours later, on a different channel, WTTW, which was the PBS affiliate of Chicago, was airing an episode of Doctor Who, which, in the middle of a scene, the feed was cut off, and there stood Max. Only this time, he had a bit of a message for his viewers.
Doctor Who sucks.
Oh, boy.
His message was... Take a fucking shower, Whovians.
You just lost a whole bunch of fans.
Ugh. Shut the fuck up. Oh, no. They're going to go cry themselves to sleep on their fucking phone booth pillow.
Well, you know, our message to them is, you know, BBC you later.
Oh, damn it.
Should I record, like, a trigger warning for Whovians at the beginning of the next episode?
Oh my god.
Oh man, I was gonna cut that out, but now I can't. That's just
too
funny.
Oh my god.
Can you imagine a fucking Chicago Whovian?
All it was
I know Chicago Whovians.
Oh yeah, fuck you do. Ew.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know that scarf he's got there, it's magical.
That scarf is great for you know, when the lake effect is happening, guys.
You know, this is kinda like Bill and Ted, only like Ted and Ted, because there's one guy. And he's a doctor.
You guys are too nice. You guys are too nice for Whovians, though, because like Whovians are fucking vicious with that fandom. Like, there's certain fandoms I will not touch with a fucking.
They were,
pole.
But then they hired an ugly guy to play the new doctor, and suddenly everyone shut the fuck up. It was glorious.
Was that the one that looked like a toe? I forget his name.
Yeah,
Peter Capaldi,
the one who played Kilgrave.
Peter Capaldi is amazing.
Peter Capaldi.
So anyway.
Jesus Christ.
So, the interruption lasted for nearly a minute and a half. And since it was public broadcasting, unlike WGN, they didn't have a spare frequency to fall back on. So,
yeah,
send
so
your
you
money
better fucking,
now,
yeah,
folks.
Donate, you cheap motherfuckers. You get a tote bag and you get to keep fucking people in rubber masks off the air. Yeah.
I think it would be way greater than, like, Downton Abbey. If they could fucking, if they actually did just fucking showed like whatever weird public access stuff that was going on, just like once in a while, just be like, this is where we're competing against people.
Yeah, they make people in public access like, okay, now you just saw our Downton Abbey. Now watch this if you don't donate. And they have, like, the kids from public access, like, with the same script, try to do the same episode. And it's just, like, a horrible, like, junior high theater production.
Shit is getting real, people. Donate.
I'd watch the shit out of that.
So, his message was heavily distorted and largely rambling and incoherent.
Ah, much like Slayer's.
Basically, yes. Oh, good one. So, going back to it, he insults WGN sportscaster Chuck Swirsky, calling him a, quote,
frickin'
liberal.
Oh my god, this is like fucking, this is like proto-alt-right trolling. This is, oh man,
oh
if only we had cartoon frogs that we could throw at the liberals. Now I just gotta hijack a fucking newscast and...
some, I don't know, British people and phone booth shit.
Whoever did this definitely posted on Slashpoll, I guarantee it. So, after calling him a frickin' liberal, he makes a reference to the then new Coke slogan while holding a can of Pepsi. You know, the catch the wave, I believe is what it was.
Yeah, because Max Headroom was their spokesperson at the time. It was like bumpers for something, and then they gave him his own, like, half-hour show later on.
Bumper?
Yeah.
So, it continues on. He wails, "Your love is fading." Which may be a reference to the Lou Pride song of 1965, or maybe that sweet 2016 Kanye track, Fade. Who knows? He may be a time traveler.
And then a vaporwave was born.
I miss the old Kanye.
Isn't that another shitty song?
Yes, that is a reference to another one of his shitty songs. Audrey has a pin that says, "I hate the new Kanye," and then a separate one that says, "I miss the old Kanye," and it's one of my favorite things.
What is the difference? That's how delusional he is. He thinks he was different at one point.
I mean, his music has changed.
The dude ruined Mike Myers' career 13 years ago. This is not new behavior.
He went from George Bush doesn't care about black people to wearing a Make America Great Again hat.
Yeah.
Are you telling me the guy who was in The Guru?
Love Guru?
Could,
yeah. Are you telling me that his career wasn't going down already?
Oh, I don't know, man. Because didn't, like, Peter Sellers make a fucking movie like that, too? His career survived. I don't know. But anyway, moving along. Yeah. We're getting way off the beat.
Yeah, track. We are. So, he then hums the theme song to the 1959 children's show Clutch Cargo. Which, if you've seen Pulp Fiction, it's the TV show that young Butch is watching before Captain Coons comes in to give him the watch that his father hid up his ass in Vietnam.
I hid this Max Headroom mask up my ass, little man, for 10 years, and now I'm giving it to you.
Actual communion deleted scene.
You will learn of this man named Chuck Swirsky.
Listen, young Bruce Willis, you'll be old and you'll die and see dead people.
But you also have to watch out for Nakatomi Plaza.
It's like a Chinese box. There's another one inside.
You know, Frankenstein never scared me.
I knew fucking mentioning Walken would rot this.
But you did it anyway.
So continuing on, there is some discussion to what the next line was. It's whether he says he stole CBS or I still see the X. Which he does point past the camera at this moment, so who knows? There's also some general moaning and wailing and something about either my files or piles.
Which, if you're not familiar with, like, old-timey sayings, piles are hemorrhoids.
Yeah.
So... Mm-hmm.
Poor guy.
whatever you want to think about, paper or ass fishers, take your pick.
So, and then the next line is,
"Oh, I just made a giant master case for all of my greatest world newspaper nerds."
Oh, I just made a giant masterpiece for all the greatest world newspaper nerds.
That is my favorite Radiohead album. The amazing 2003 follow-up to Hail to the Thief.
I fucking hate Radiohead. So this is either, it was part, like, I think it's speculation on, like, the grandeur of what he was doing. Like, I just gave everybody a story. Here we go. Which he did for, like, a minute, but that was about it. So he then picks up and puts on a glove, stating that, quote, his brother is wearing the other one, and it's dirty.
My brother is wearing the other one.
There's mention the, it, like, it's bloody, or it has blood on it. It's distorted, so you can't really hear it clearly. And, like, the trans gets
read.
It says something. So then after that, the scene jump cuts to a different position. This person is now holding the mask off to their side, which what looks like their thumb through the mouth hole, exposing their bare ass to a figure behind them, who then begins to slap said ass with a fly swatter, all the while screaming and shouting, "They're coming to get me."
Yeah,
and it's really creepy when you watch it, too, because the figure is dressed up, like, in an old-timey kind of dress. Like, a lot of people have compared it sort of, like, to Annie Oakley.
Yeah.
And it's a very weird, very rigid movement to the point where a few people have theorized that it's actually a mannequin being puppeted by a string. But I watched it in slow motion, and
it looks like a person.
Yeah, it's just, it looks like a person just tensing up because the arm does kind of is a little more flexible than hard plastic would be. But I don't know. That's just the way it looks to me. Who knows? I could be wrong. But it is, it's very weird looking.
Yeah, I mean, it could be just the quality of what was VHS at the time.
I mean, this is honestly, you know, I mean, it is funny, but it's genius performance art. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
This turned pop culture on its fucking ass.
Yeah.
So it's very punk rock.
Then the broadcast ends and the episode of Doctor Who continued on.
Ugh, it's the scariest part of this fucking story.
Oh.
They had to finish watching the horror of Fang Rock.
Yeah. But anyway, the following day's news touched briefly on the incident.
Sports anchor Dan Rowan had just started his Sunday Night Bears report when the screen suddenly went black. Then came back on with a new unruly presence, a man wearing a Max Headroom mask. We have been taken over by a video pirate for a short time until technicians here changed microwave channels between the studio and the transmitter and knocked him off the air.
And apparently somebody with some microwave equipment was able to interfere with our signal going to the Hancock transmitter.
Now, this is not just anybody off the street. He has to have an electronic expertise of some level, right?
Yes, he does. It takes very sophisticated equipment to do this at a significant power level. So this isn't something that just anyone would be able to accomplish.
But Channel 9 wasn't alone in its Max Headroom appearance. There was even a longer episode on Channel 11, public broadcasting.
Funny way to learn.
I'll get you a hot drink, miss.
A little after 11 p.m., Doctor Who was knocked out by the Max lookalike, who pitched a soft drink, then performed a series of antics that station officials found less than humorous before the pirate himself pulled the plug.
Fortunately, it was a self-destruct mechanism. It was beyond our control. We now have already implemented steps whereby we could take something like that off the air immediately if it were to occur again. It did, of its own volition, go off the air, as I say, after about a minute and a half.
It annoyed some viewers.
No, I just thought it would be just a slight mess up, but that in the middle of the tape, it's going to be... You're going to have to tape over it.
Hearing the anchors discuss it was pretty interesting. They referenced something... quote, a marital aid.
By this time, the pirate had managed to insert audio as well, along with a display of a marital aid and a portion of his or her anatomy.
Which is just another one of those very old-timey, gentle, conservative ways of saying dildo.
There's a dildo in this?
Speculated. I'm not entirely sure what they're referencing. Maybe the fly swatter?
Speculated dildo?
I saw speculated dildo at the 9:30 club. They open for Black Flag. Yeah.
I wonder what the British term for dildo would be. Because you know they have like a goofier version of like whatever.
All right, you know what? I don't care if the FBI is watching. I'm Googling that. British. British.
It is a teleflogger.
Please tell me that's what it fucking is.
Dildo. British slang for... What the fuck is this?
We call it the old mollywop.
I love the whole Cockney rhyming slang shit, where they're like, I gave her a rumpy pumpy in the dumper.
Oh, man, where the fuck is this?
I gave the galley a toss and tickle, I did.
A bit of the old ultraviolence.
I say, Mum, open your gab and let me put in me pud.
Hey, did anyone else, if you watched the actual footage of the Max Headroom thing, when they came back on the Doctor Who show, there was something weird about, like, as soon as they cut back in, there was something about the generator, but it was on the TV show, and it's really weird how that fit in with what was going on, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, that does happen. Tom Baker does say something about the generators.
Yeah, and that reminds me of, like, the first time we crossed paths when we were talking about the Art Bell incident.
Yeah.
When the generator got hijacked and all that. Yeah, wow. That's weird. Oh, and by the way, British slang for dildo is dink.
Oh my god, that's incredible.
Oh, he had, you're talking about the guy with the mask and he was holding a dink in the video.
How's the bunch of spread apart and then he's a dinky with the dink?
Maybe that's what was peeking through the mask. Like when I said I thought it was the thumb, maybe that's what that was.
A small dink.
I think dink is the new name I'm going to start calling people that piss me off. You damn dink.
Very expensive. Peter Dildo Hitch.
Oh man, I'm sure his life was great growing up.
That sucks dink.
I was thinking of that. I couldn't imagine how to say it.
Oh god, he must have been fucking tormented in high school. Fucking Peter Dinklage.
But he's from New Jersey.
Oh, is he?
Wait, Peter Dinklage is not British?
No, he's from New Jersey.
I'm from the magical mushroom forest of Clifton, New Jersey.
Wait, was he just born there and then went back?
To where?
The Shire.
Were like his parents on holiday here?
No, it's not his accent.
So he's just been playing British for 20 years.
Well, British people play English all the time.
Yeah, dude, go watch him in a movie called Station Agent.
How the fuck was this dude from the same town as my dad?
He's from Morristown.
Yeah, that's where my dad was born.
Wait, what the fuck?
He was probably of the thought that if you use a British accent long enough, you'll end up in a Peter Jackson movie.
Hold up. Peter Dinklage is from Morristown?
Yeah.
Yup, apparently.
I lived right next to there.
Dude, Peter Dinklage is one of us.
Yeah. I used to rent tapes from Blockbuster in Morristown.
Yo, John, he came out of Shepherd.
He's a Jersey dirtbag, but he made it good by playing Tyrion, so good for him.
Well, yeah, you know what? I'll drink to that. Number 5 on Podcast 1289's list of greatest Americans, Peter Dinklage. Fucking Jersey boy.
Here, here.
Yes, sir.
Here,
Peter
here.
Dinklage,
Peter, here, Dinklage, here. Peter Dinklage, Peter Dinklage, Peter Dinklage.
And by the way, that's why he's going to survive to the end, because he's from New Jersey.
Yeah, if you can survive New Jersey, you can survive a lot of things.
Absolutely.
Including death.
Wait, shit, weren't we supposed to, do something this week?
Yeah, we're supposed to roll up another Patreon.
Shit, we were?
Yeah, you kind of slipped past my mind. Why don't you shoot some ideas? Past me. We'll figure this out.
Hey, what if we did one of those ASMR things?
Nah, that'd be too weird.
Yeah, it's for people too, because they smoke weed. We could do another Josh Hogan.
I don't know, man. Like, last time I saw a box with one of those on it things that he does, where Shroom Tech, and there was a half-eaten skull in there. Ooh. So I think he's on to us.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, we gotta definitely rule out Alan James, because I had a nightmare where he was just doing the ah scream at me for like an hour and a half in a completely black room last night, so yeah.
Are you sure that just wasn't him running around screaming? Because I feel like he just runs across the wild screaming.
You know, to be fair, I woke up not at all.
Just one big coke binge.
Not at all well rested, and I've got like what appear to be rope burns on my hands, so maybe I was kidnapped. I'm not sure which.
We could always do an Evangelion, Jello pudding cups.
That feels a little forced.
How do you portmanteau that?
I like the portmanteau. Hadn't you been talking about some, like, cannibal Swedish chef idea?
Oh, yeah. That was, imagine if the Swedish chef was a cannibal, but I can't really get past how his whole lexicon or his whole jargon would be, because it would just be like, first do we take the boomy boomy off the streets, every chubby chubby off the peepy peepy.
Wasn't that, wait dude, that was just the Armin Mivus episode, right?
No, he's European.
Colonist white people, the same diff. You know what we could do? We could take a bunch of fucking shrooms and just think really hard about the names of all of our patrons. You think that'd work?
Yeah, we could psychopathically send our love energy across to our patrons.
You know,
and
if we do that,
possibly get a restraining order in the process.
Look, man, I'm not talking about doing some fucking chaos magic. I'm not talking about masturbating inside of a sigil. I do that on my own time. I'm just thinking, you know, maybe we just kind of sit down and do a lot of fucking drugs, and maybe think about Kevin M. or Matthew W., Breach B., maybe Joe K. and West T.
Sorry.
It's cool.
I'm trying to... No. I'm trying to send my thoughts across.
I feel where you're coming from. And I'm pretty sure Kathleen LH, Jamie F, Anne M, Jane MH. That was intense. I felt that one.
Yeah.
And I'm certain so did Elise N and... Does that say Nanners? Oh, yeah, no, that definitely says Nanners. So I think maybe if we just do psychic shout-outs to all of them...
I think he or she would be the only person who could say my shit is Nanners. Or no, that was Bananas.
Get the fuck out of my car!
Anyway.
So. Shit, where was I? So back on the news. One man said that the incident upset him so much that he, quote, wanted to smash the television set.
I got so upset that I wanted to bust a TV set. I really did.
So he wasn't overreacting at all.
That's Hoovian.
Very normal, large adult son we got here.
And one kid thought it was funny.
So what did you think about the whole thing?
Very, very funny.
And then some very milquetoast white folks were just like, they didn't appreciate seeing a bare bottom.
I just think it's beyond everything.
Also, they interviewed a man from the FCC threatening whoever did this, saying that they were in, quote, very big trouble. And repeated.
It was just some guy from the mailroom.
They faced a fine of $100,000 and up to a year in jail, if caught, or both. And he said, for someone to do something like this, they must not be, quote, too bright because they'd get caught. Whoops.
Could you imagine going to jail, doing a fucking year in the slammer for that? And it's just like, what are you in for? Me? I killed 5 people robbing a bank. What about you?
Buggery.
I ran over a cop with my fucking 10 speed. I don't know. With my fucking pickup truck. It's like, how about you?
I showed my bare ass on TV.
I put on a fucking Max Headroom mask and talked about Clutch Cargo and shit. And it's just like, are you one of them animus?
Yeah, it's like, no, I went on TV and LARPed as an episode of Paranoia Agent for a bit, and yeah, they didn't like that.
So, interestingly enough, however, this wasn't the first time something like this had happened.
Nope.
Briefly, back in 86, on the evening of April 27th, a man who went by the pseudonym Captain Midnight broadcasted a signal over the frequency for HBO.
Yeah, I saw Captain Midnight at CBGB's. He opened for Captain Beefheart.
The message read over the SMPTE color bars with a message superimposed over it that said, "Good evening, HBO, from Captain Midnight. $12.99 a month? No way. Brackets, Showtime / movie channel, beware."
Well, how much is that in today's money?
That is $29.87.
Dude, people were paying that now.
I pay like $15 a month for HBO, so...
Yeah, so do I. I pay for it on... I pay for it as an add-on on Sling. And you know what? That was when I first felt like an adult. It wasn't the birth of my son. It wasn't getting married. It was, I can afford HBO. I'm an adult now.
You don't just only get to watch it in hotels.
I'm not just watching it on scrambly TVs.
Like, I remember that being a huge selling point. Like, they have HBO? Sweet. That means a movie will be on. Or some show I will have no idea what it is.
Whoa, I don't need to watch the scrambled porn anymore.
That's right.
Do they still have that?
The broadcast lasted for over 4.5 minutes, and his protest was against charges for access to scrambled satellite channels, which in this protest was seen by more than half of the 14.6 million subscribers HBO had at the time. So it was a minor inconvenience for them.
There's nothing more net magical than trying to jack off to a fucking scrambled boob.
I think that's why we all like Salvador Dali so much.
I am honestly surprised that isn't like a genre of porn somewhere.
Oh, it's gonna be real soon. You know, if Vaporwave can make a comeback, scrambled titties will.
Like,
yeah, I saw scrambled titties at CBGB's. They open for Screaming Trees.
So the man who did this was named John R. McDougall, who was an electric engineer who broadcasted the signal from a teleport uplink station in Ocala, Florida, which he was working at. The signal was then triangulated, and he was later arrested. He was fined with $5,000 and given 1 year of unsupervised probation. And they also suspended his amateur radio license for a year as well.
Not his ham!
Aw, damn!
Not his ham radio!
Not his ham!
They're just government agents coming in, like, collecting his crystal radio set off of his desk.
So, unlike John, the Max Headroom impersonator was never caught or identified. They don't know for sure how they did it. They speculate that he had a microwave transmitter closer to the Sears Tower, which broadcasted the main signal it was a stronger signal than the one that the transmitter...
Isn't that the plot of, like, all of Nolan's Batman films?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. There's some sort of microwave transmitter in Chicago used for nefarious purposes.
Yeah, that's exactly what that was.
Yeah,
yeah, more or less, yeah.
The WGN transmitter was only just a few blocks away from the Sears Tower, so he had to be closer than that original transmitter so he could have the stronger signal. It should also be stated that they didn't do this live. Like, that kind of came up in a lot of different things, like, this was live, but no, it was most likely a pre-recorded communique.
No, it was 100% pre-recorded, but yeah. We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, so this has remained a mystery for about 30 years for now.
Over 30 years.
And nobody's really ever admitted to anything, no one has been caught. So the case is effectively dead. That is, until the internet stepped in.
Uh-oh.
Oh, good old internet.
I got a feeling this is gonna involve tentacles and regret.
What is the transition from this to that? Is there, like, I have a Bloomington, Indiana resident, Steve Fournier. Is that where we're going? Or is there, like, an introduction you want to do for this?
Basically, you know, we could just unsolve mysteries it and just be like, yeah, for the last 31 years...
I can't do a Robert Stack.
I could do a Dennis Farina, because he was from Chicago.
Our crack team is standing by.
Our team of crack smokers are standing by.
It's just fighting.
But, no, for the last 31 years, it's been one of the great mysteries of pop culture, essentially. It's who was the guy behind the mask.
People got to know
why I put that rubber mask on my face and talked about my piles, Mr. Garrison. And just Kevin Costner gets up and leaves. He just throws his blazer down like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? Oliver Stone presents.
When did they start talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Oh my God.
That
was one of the funniest things ever. Basically, real quick side story.
For those that don't know.
The week that I met Dan because I went up to chill with Vaccaro at his dorm room at the Culinary Institute of America up in Hyde Park.
Yeah, this is funny.
Dan was Mike's roommate.
So that's how we met.
One day when Mike was at class.
You're welcome, world.
Dan had some time off between classes, so we were chilling, and we were watching JFK, the Oliver Stone, Kevin Costner
great
film.
Flick.
We weren't really watching it. It was more just like background noise while we just chatted and bullshit.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. But we are 2 hours and 45 minutes into a 3-hour movie, right? And Dan just looks at me and goes, when do they start talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis? And I'm like, and Dan is probably the only other person other than me that has seen this fucking movie. But I'm like, you're thinking of 13 Days.
I remember that movie.
That's a good movie. I'm like, Kennedy has been dead for 6 years by this point in the movie. The Cuban Missile Crisis isn't coming, baby.
I just remember genuinely thinking, like, this is Kevin Costner. This movie's about JFK. When do they start talking about this?
I'm sorry, it's not like, you know, Kevin Costner would make 2 movies about JFK. Come on, who would do that?
It was the first time I got a reference wrong in front of Jesse.
I know, it's a very special moment.
And both of those films, he uses a shitty fake accent, too.
That's accurate. So, let's get back to it.
But yeah, so for 31 years, we've been wondering, who is the man behind the mask? And there really weren't any suspects until around, what, Dan, like maybe 2010, people started to take notice when the internet really started to hone in on this?
Yeah. So let me just hand all the background real quick. So it was speculated that it was a Bloomington, Indiana resident, Steve Fournier. He played in a punk band called the Blood Farmers, and according to this theory, Fournier was going to play one of the band's music videos once he had successfully hijacked the TV signal, but at the last minute, chickened out, because that would have been the worst thing you could do. Like, there's this band on here. I've never heard of them. They're very small. Let's go find them. Hi, did you do this? Yes?
Are you a blood farmer? I'm the police.
Yeah, hi, we're looking for the blood farmers.
Hey, you wouldn't happen to have any knife letter openers in there, would you? Or like a Dungeon Master's guide, or a guy that like hijacked a Doctor Who episode while wearing that rubber face?
So yeah, of course he stopped doing that. And what he then did was perform this bizarre Max Headroom act instead.
It was, you know, it was probably some like Grant Morrison ritual of some sort. You know what I mean? It's some black magic shit.
However, there are a few factors that render the scenario unlikely.
I thought that would get a laugh from Rob at least.
Honestly, that sounds reasonable to me though.
The level of preparation and care put into this strange appearance does not suggest a casual improvisation. And more importantly, there's a noticeable edit in the broadcast occurring right after the masked hijacker removes his gloves from his hands and tosses them aside. Then his bare ass shows up. You know, we talked about that.
Yeah, no, there is a very, it is, you can't even debate it. It is a clear cut edit.
Yeah, it's a really hard edit. I mean, they cut and he's in a completely different position. He's standing in front of the camera and then he's bent over sideways.
Screaming.
They didn't even do like the George Lucas wipe or anything.
It wasn't a star wipe or anything.
Yeah.
Didn't even do a rainbow star wipe, man.
Yeah, no, none of that.
So, further contradictions to this theory come from the bandmate, or 48's bandmates, who insisted they had never set foot in Chicago and had did not have the necessary technical know-how to pull off a... God damn it, my cat is using the litter box right now, so it's really loud.
Oop.
That's toast, everybody.
Cat's shitting.
It's just angrily spraying turds all over the room.
There's a line in Full Metal Jacket that I never noticed until the last time I watched it, which is when Joker says, "I wouldn't shit you, man, you're my favorite turd." I cannot wait to use that in real life. Oh, I'm watching this animal take a shit right now.
This week's Patreon ad is just Dan's cat, like, aggressively shitting. Use your...
Oh, save this audio for future use, please.
Yes, please consider using this.
I'm just imagining the cat staring fucking Dan straight in the eyes and just slowly...
Get that snossage out of right, there and let's get on the road.
Hurry up. So, further contradictions to this theory come from the fact that the bandmates insisted they had never set foot in Chicago and they did not have the know-how to do any of this. And, of course, there was no music video for the Blood Farmers that ever existed. So, Fournier later created a series of fictional short films centered around a character of Shy St. John, a masked model who, after losing her arms and legs to a car accident, replaced her missing limbs with mannequin parts.
That's how that works, right?
Yeah, totally.
Shay, are you still doing that hand thing? I heard you're doing the hand thing today. God, what is that? Shay, what is it? Hood. You've been doing this for 24/7. Shay, you've been doing the hand thing all day. Heard you were.
So, there are 56 videos that eventually made their way to a YouTube channel called Elastic Spastic Plastic Fantastic in August of 2006. And
yeah, that's my favorite D-Light album.
What the fuck?
I'm still thinking of the cat.
What the fuck is this?
I mean, she's back. Okay, she's out, finally. Alright, some viewers notice an eerie similarity between the Shy videos and the Max Headroom incidents, but either way, Fournier died in 2010 from complications resulted to alcoholism, and the Elastic Spastic Fantastic YouTube channel was eventually taken down on December 22nd, 2017. So his legacy did not live on. Well, maybe it did. It didn't, though, because that didn't happen.
Fake news.
So another theory, and this is the one that, like, is kind of the main, like, best well-known one. It was in 2010. Someone called themselves Bopogue? Is that what it is?
B-Pogue.
Okay. So,
Pogues?
In 2010, someone calling themselves B-Pogue told Reddit users that they knew who was behind the infamous Max Headroom incident. In the AMA section, he wrote, "I believe I know who was behind the Max Headroom incident that occurred in Chicago TV in 1987. When I was in my early teens, a number of friends were into a local freaking slash hacking scene, parentheses, this was suburban Chicago, from about 1985 until 1993 or so. They were much older than me, parentheses, high school and college age. I spent countless hours and nights over the ensuing years hanging out with them in local BBSs and the dial-up chat systems and the occasional in-person get-together. Two of the people I knew were brothers. I still remember their full names, but I don't think it's a good idea to share that publicly. The FCC may still want to have a little talk, at least one of the two brothers, who we'll call Jay, the one who I believe is behind it. Secondly, the person who...
The FCC could not give less of a shit about this. It was 30 fucking years ago.
On technology that doesn't even exist anymore.
It does not exist anymore. Like, if you've tried to bring whatever technology that was used in this to a Goodwill, they'd be like, we can't do fucking anything with this. And we sell used bed sheets.
Did he say that he referred to the brothers as J and K?
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that what they call each other on Men in Black?
Yes.
Yeah. What?
There's the connection.
Yep.
Oh my God.
Illuminati confirmed.
The post continued on. Secondly, the person who I believe did it, Jay, has moderate to severe autism and, at least at the time, was being cared for by his brother, who we'll call K. And I don't want to disrupt their lives. Thirdly, I don't completely have proof, only a heap of circumstantial evidence. People who were into the hacking scene back then were basically the same type of people who are into the hacking scene now. Guys who live in their parents' basement, charming slash brilliant guys who don't think to bathe often, and often lacking the social skills pretty much across the board.
Yep.
So yeah, like, wow. This is kind of hitting it on the head. They hang out at Denny's until they're asked to leave, and they can quote Monty Python sketches from memory.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, us.
And they also sleep with J.R.R. Tolkien's under their bed, where other guys stash porn. So,
why not both?
Quick sidebar, this is why I think this theory is absolute bullshit, by the way. It is just way too on the nose for, like, the kind of people that you imagine being internet people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just hitting all the notes.
What, people like Monty Python?
Yeah, people like us.
Yeah.
It kind of feels Barnum statement-y.
So, continuing on. The post went on. Despite the lack of grooming and social skills, there was occasionally a party every so often, or at least a get-together at somebody's place. One of these get-togethers was in an apartment called LaGrange, which was the suburb of Chicago in the winter of 87. Kay lived in a shared apartment with his girlfriend, along with a roommate, parentheses, also a fellow hacker.
That's another reason why I don't think this story is true. There was a girlfriend present.
Who were referred to as M. Kay and his girlfriend lived in one half of the apartment, and M lived in the other half.
Wasn't Agent M Michael Jackson?
Yes, it was.
I could be Agent M.
I could be Agent M for molest all the children.
So, Jay lived with his parents and never moved out. Two rooms of this apartment were separated by a clothesline, strung in a doorway, and a large rug hung over it. Practically every square inch, with the exception of one corner, was packed with systems working, and some apparently not working. So basically, like, just a bunch of computer shit everywhere. Basically, what I imagine would be like a post-apocalyptic weird place where you'd have to train shit.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's circumstantial, this is the first bit of evidence I have. The Max Headroom video features a guy who, at the point, holds up what appears to be a vibrator or dildo, or a marital aid, as they called it on
dink
the news.
A dink.
A dink, as it dink. Were.
Yeah, yeah.
And tosses it out of frame. The end of the video shows a woman dressed up like Annie Oakley, swatting someone's bare ass with a fly swatter. This is the sort of humor that Jay loved. Jay was at the party in the apartment that afternoon. I didn't talk to him directly, parentheses, me and the friend of mine who were there didn't really talk to anybody that day. But I did overhear what the others were talking about. They were referring to Jay planning to do something, quote, big, over the weekend. I later asked them what they were talking about, and someone, parentheses, probably Kay, told me to, quote, just watch Channel 11 tonight. And I did happen to be watching Channel 11 later that night, having forgotten the whole, quote, big conversation earlier that day.
How do you forget that shit? You're at a fucking LAN yeah. party with a bunch of fucking nerds that very specifically tell you, watch this channel tonight, some shit's gonna go down, and Max Headroom is having his ass spanked by fucking Annie Oakley in the middle of a fucking Doctor Who rerun, and that slips your mind?
Mr. Robot really loses it in the fourth season.
What fucking Black Mirror episode is this?
So, continuing on. So, I saw it, but I didn't put two and two together at the time.
Bullshit.
Beepo goes on to write that in addition to these aforementioned reasons, they believe Jay was the hijacker due to both of them saying ooh a lot while jumping back and forth between subjects while talking, as people do.
Ooh, it was Macho Man. Macho Max Headroom, yeah.
Additionally, Jay's obsession with newspapers, which the hijacker mentions several times, really only once, but and then Jay most likely being a child around that time, when Clutch Cargo had originally aired, which was a 1956 show. So, yeah, maybe. So, like you said, this is all just circumstantial bullshit, right? Like, these are all just things that, like, kind of fit, or they're also entirely made up, I'm pretty certain.
But at the same time, like, and I am saying this as someone who suffers from autism spectrum disorder, but can you imagine meeting someone with such a severe case of autism that you met them a few times and, like, 30 years later, you hear about the most bizarre thing ever done on television, and you're like, you know what? It was probably that fucking dude from that LAN party I met 3 decades ago. What kind of first impression do you have to make to become a suspect in this?
So, 6 years later, Beepo returned to Reddit. This time, the Unsolved Mysteries forum.
Our crack squad.
Was Blade there?
And he then wrote another post. Quote, after the publication of the Motherboard / Vice magazine article which talked about the incident, Rick Klein, curator of the Museum of Classic Chicago Television / FuzzyMemories.tv, and I agreed to stay in touch with each other. Several weeks ago, Rick and I had the luxury of meeting and speaking with several engineers and technicians who were actively working for WBBN, WTTW, WGN, and other companies in the Chicago broadcasting community at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They yielded a wealth of very detailed information, including specifics about what kind of location, gear, physical access, and more importantly, what sort of station-specific knowledge that would have been necessary in order to pull off the intrusion themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, after the last rounds of interviews, and having looked at the resulting evidence pile in total, Rick and I have concluded that the possibility of this having been an outside job is basically zero.
Listen, I don't trust any investigation that was conducted by 2 guys and one of them's named Rick. I have never met a single fucking person named Richard that was trustworthy.
My dad's name is Richard.
No, your dad's name is Mr. Jones. Try to keep up.
My dad's name is Richard, asshole.
Richard Gere. Oh, no, he's guilty of animal cruelty. Hey, do you think when Richard Gere, like, you know, wants to have a night out, he just puts on like a Sunday best, gels his hair up, and goes to the fucking PetSmart?
He gels something before going there, let me tell you that. Hey-o!
Oh my god.
He just brings the cash register a fucking thing of flowers.
I'd like to buy your greasiest hamster, please.
I will buy your greasiest hamster or one most receptive to grease.
Oh no!
The one with the low self-esteem.
Do you have a chinchilla that sweats a lot? Yeah, I can use one of those.
Oh no.
He's upgrading.
So, it continued on. To make a long story short, all the things which needed to be possessed by an outsider, amateur, or outside amateurs, or amateurs nonetheless, no matter how talented, simply did not exist in the wild in 1987. This and other information we were never able to corroborate. And this is what allows us to free J and K and all the suspects with full confidence.
Please give me your moistest guinea pig.
Rick is continuing to work the theory that he has maintained all along.
Do you shave the pets on demand?
John, stop.
So, yeah, J and K, they're free to go.
We're going to hell for this episode.
Oh, this fucking episode, Jesse? This is the one we're fucking going to hell for? Really?
Animals are innocent.
The scales are just tipped.
What do you say the circumference of your bearded dragon would be?
Oh, no.
Y'all got any mogwais?
Chicken.
Are mogwais considered adults?
That's a really good question.
Actually, yeah, come to think of it.
So,
yeah.
Rick is continuing to work the theory that he's maintained all along. Which was the angle that, quote, Max had ties to the local Chicago broadcasting community.
It was Harry Carey. Hey, I stole CBS.
Yeah. Hi, if you were a hot dog.
And you were really hungry.
Would you eat yourself?
I know I would. Cubs win.
Cubs win. Cubs win.
What if the moon were made of cheese?
Oh my god. And then the post continues on where he says, for my part, this pretty much marks my end of my direct involvement in the case. For what it's worth, we recently obtained a photo of Jay, and he seems like a happy, normal, well-rounded adult with a family. A far cry of the off-the-wall character I recall him being 27 years ago, when I was a newly minted, nervous 13-year-old at a party.
Well, he calls it his family, but it's actually 3 body pillows.
Jay is that guy that has that weird stuffed animal collection.
He's still got a race car bed.
So yeah, that's the Max Headroom thing. We're never going to know what actually happened.
And if you are listening to this, because I know some people that do stuff like this like to follow their own press, and maybe he is out there and occasionally searches hashtag Max Headroom incident. Right on.
Hashtag too okay. Spooky.
And Dan Rohn, if you reply to us after this episode drops,
we'll send you a sticker, dude. Yeah. Like, you've got to fucking reply. Tell us to go fuck ourselves, please.
Go Bears. Bear down.
Send us hate mail. We want hate mail from Dan Rohn.
Dan Rohn is our new nemesis.
Yo, not even. He's like our, like, we have like a shrine to him. We want him to just like make death threats against us.
We just keep harassing.
We're coming for you, Dan Rohn. We're going to have a rap battle.
Cut a promo on him. Ooh, Dan Rohn.
We're going to get arrested for this, aren't we?
Probably. If we haven't been arrested yet, we ain't going down just now.
I ain't going down for fucking Dan Rohn either, you know? Sorry, Dan, you know, we love you, buddy. Love that sports break. But no, I'm not losing my fucking freedom for you with your fucking Dave Coulier looking ass.
Okay. That's all I got, if anybody has anything they want to add.
What's your chinchilla shaving policy?
Do you have any de-winged fruit bats?